You're listening to the Mazingo Baseball Podcast. I'm your host, Harold Mazingo. Just a brief introduction on myself. I was a 15th round draft pick by the New York Mets in the 2003 MLB draft. And I was a 6th round pick by the Kansas City Royals in the 2006 MLB draft. I spent 6 seasons pitching professionally, and now I own Mazingo Baseball. And I am very excited to welcome y'all to the Mazingo Baseball Podcast. Enjoy. All right, welcome back to the Mazingo Baseball Podcast. Today's guest is Brian Eisenberg. Brian is a New York Times bestselling author, and he wrote a new book specifically for baseball parents out there. It's called Committed, The Guide to Developing College-Ready Recruits from Middle School Through High School. And he is also a host on Twitter of a new thing going called Twitter Spaces, and the show, if you will, it's a weekly series about development and recruiting, and it's called Mentors of Baseball. It happens once a week, and it's a pretty cool thing. So, Brian, welcome to the show, and you can sort of kick us off by talking about some of those things.
Yeah, no, I'm excited to join you. You know, just been loving what you've been doing with your Young Gun series and all the Ground Floor stuff, which, you know, obviously had some influence in the book. I don't know of any other book that's out there that talks about ground force, you know, at that entry level space for parents to understand, because I think, you know, people need to have it. Just to give people some background, you know, I've spent the last 25 years focused in on business optimization, right? When my whole motto has been, you know, be better today than you were yesterday, which of course applies really well to baseball. And I've always been passionate since I'm a little kid. And as my son, Sammy, started developing his skills and passion around 10, 11, it's when we started seeing some of the tech come out. And I got very involved in Twitter and you know, making some great relationships to learn about the game and stumbling my way across to the point where, as a junior this year, he's now committed to a JUCO that he's really excited about going to. And wanted to make sure that there was a book out there. And I got together with Walter Beatty, who's got 40 plus years of experience, you know, 2 kids who've gone through it. He's helped 250 plus kids, you know, get to college and beyond, to put out a book that is sort of like that treasure map that you wish you had, but you know that, you know, even if you have the map, it's kind of like that Journey to the Center of the Earth kind of movie with the Rock, you know. Yep. It's still going to be an adventure. You still have a lot of work to do, but at least you don't have to go off the rails.
Yep. No, absolutely. Hey, so one of my favorite things in the book, and I think it's towards the back, there's sort of this step-by-step guide based off of grade level for parents to sort of follow. And it not only talks about like the baseball aspect of things, but what you should be doing in terms of reaching out to college coaches and what you need to be doing in terms of in the classroom type stuff. Right. If you could take just a second to sort of give a brief overview of some of that stuff. Now, you don't have to give us too much information, but just kind of talk about how that came about. What were some of the guidelines y'all were following there?
So that one's really interesting. And you notice on the cover, you know, we've got several, you know, contributors to the book. And that whole section actually came from the current Rice baseball pitching coach, Coulter Bostic. He had actually created most of that part of the book for his private clients, because he realized that obviously, you know, coaching them through, you know, a lot of high school pitchers, that recruiting was part of the goal. And he started putting this together. And, you know, there's not a coincidence that he's doing some amazing things now with, you know, with Rice baseball.
I'm actually really excited to see this new indoor pitching lab that they're creating. Yeah, I'm really, yeah, they're kind of teasing at it right now. I'm curious to see what it's going to look like.
In the summer, we get to play a lot of tournaments in the Houston area. And I already hinted to Coulter that, you know, we're probably going to have to come, you know, kindle our friendship. We haven't seen each other in a while. And
right.
Maybe just check it out a little bit, because they're doing some amazing things, like pro level things. And I, you know, look, this is what happens with with data and technology. I saw it in the business world. My previous book to Committed was a book called Be Like Amazon. Even a lemonade stand can do it. And it's the same principle. Like, of course, Amazon could do all those things because it was Amazon. But people forget, like 25 years ago, Amazon was a startup competing with Walmart, right? That had, you know, trillions of dollars and tons of data. Amazon took a different perspective, poured everything into it. Yes, got a lot of investment money. But you could take those same principles and apply them at a smaller scale. And it's the same thing, right? Like what he's doing, yes, of course, we're starting to see it at schools like Rice, right? But it will eventually, over the next few years, again, you know, every year and a half, technology, you know, doubles in speed and gets cheaper. Like it's, you know, it's Moore's Law. It's just is what happens. We will start seeing this stuff everywhere.
Yep. No, absolutely. Yeah. I mean, look, there's quite a few colleges right now that have their own little pitching labs that have been pretty successful with them. And I think with not only the culture that Rice has, but the coaching staff that they have assembled right now, they've got a chance to do some pretty special stuff there for sure.
Oh, 100%. And here's the thing also, on the, you know, inverse side of that, there are plenty of schools that have these labs that also barely use the data. Like, yeah, everyone kind of showcases and goes through there, but they don't really do anything with the data, right?
Very true.
And then I look at someone like you, like, you know, they have force plates in their mouths. Wonderful. You're actually using more data about ground force with a Wii board than many of them are doing with, you know, $5,000 force plates.
Yeah, you know, there was not the intention to talk about this, but it's been very fascinating, especially with all the, when everything was shut down with COVID and everything, several colleges and professional organizations that have this, like what you were just saying, they have this latest, greatest technology with the force plates in the mound and all of this. And they were calling me to ask me like how to read the data off of what I've seen with a Wii board. It's kind of comical. I'm flattered, but it's kind of comical at the same time because that should not be happening.
But it's not. And let me explain why. And I think this is an important part to it. You know, everybody looks at Amazon and they look at it from like this big non-feeling culture, where in fact they've systematized the parts that matter to people's feelings, if that makes sense.
Right. Okay?
And so, for example, they realized, and Jeff Bezos talks about it, like, no one's ever going to say, hey, you know what? I want to pay more for that. No, I want to wait longer for a package to arrive. No, right. I want less selection, not more. And so they zeroed in on the things that actually matter, that have an impact to their brand and the way people perceive them. So if there's a problem, their customer service is going to handle it better than just about everyone else does it, because they know that matters. They focused in on selection, 5 to 7 times of their competitors. That matters. They focused on getting it to you faster, right? They can get stuff. Sometimes I can get stuff here, pre-COVID, in 30 minutes, I used to be able to get stuff here in Austin at times, okay? Ridiculous, right?
Yep.
And so like, when you realize that and you focus in on the pieces that matter, now all of a sudden you're making a huge difference. So what happens is, you come back to baseball, you've got this force plate data. Look, we all know ground force matters. Like, at least you should. And again, for parents that don't, I explain why in the book, just understanding how it goes through the body. Just real, real basic understanding for everybody to get it. Cause I'm no expert in it, but I know enough that it matters. And so, you know, when I look at kids and I look at kids, you know, pitching or hitting, and I'm looking at the type of shoes they're wearing, or, you know, if you're in a weight room, as a simple example, and you go to squat and you're on your toes, you're going to fall forward. Right.
Right.
Yep. And so that's understanding little bits of ground force, just the very, very basic stuff of it. So then when you go ahead and you start going to, like, you know, we met Randy Sullivan and his Newt force plate at the ABCA, 3 years ago, you know, and Sammy got on that mound and Randy ran him through a couple of things with, you know, water balls and stuff like that. You're like, oh yeah, well, you know, it makes total sense. Now, Do right. I absolutely need to have it to make a kid better? No. But if I'm not even focused on it, and especially if I'm not focused on it when I have the data, the culture of improvement is broken.
And right.
That's the issue that we need to have. And that's why we titled the book Committed, right? It's not only committed to college, it's committed to the process of getting better. It's the committed yep. that, you know, baseball is such a great metaphor for business and life because it's never perfect. You know, there's always going to be failures. There's always going to be points where you fall on your face. And that's okay. Just get up, wipe it off, and next. Right? Figure out how to do it the next time.
Yep. No, absolutely. All right. So, by the way, I love that. I never thought about that aspect of the title of the book, but it makes it resonate even more now. So speaking of the recruiting process, you kind of beat me to the punch when you're talking about Sammy. I was going to talk about Sammy just recently committing and how awesome that is. But let's talk a little bit, if you will, or if you're comfortable with it, I guess, about Sammy's recruitment process and how that sort of potentially shaped some of the guidelines in the book.
So, you know, Walter had his kids meet up with Eric Cressy when they were relatively young. And that was obviously a big difference maker.
Right.
And I asked Walter early on when we were writing the book, I said, you know, were your kids like elite when they were young? Cause you know, Sammy was, he was that big kid, but he was always slow. You know, yeah, he was stronger cause he was bigger, but he was not the natural athlete, but he was always gifted from a baseball IQ point of view. And so it's funny, we have a friend of ours who, we still see today that they started off when we first moved to Texas. And he's a grade younger, but they played together on All-Stars and in Little League, they were like seven. And I'll never forget, you know, they're facing each other in like, you know, in one of the, you know, final games of the season type thing. And Sammy's watching the umpire from previously and recognizing the umpire is calling low strikes on this kid. And this must've been when they're like 8 or 9 years old.
Right.
Okay. Maybe 10. Cause it was kid pitch. Right. And so Sammy starts him off low, gets these, you know, borderline pitches as strikes and then throws him a high heater and strikes him out. And meanwhile, like this kid batted a 356 this season in high school as a freshman and like dominated as a pitcher. Like the kid's a dude, but he's been bowling also like a 300 bowler since he's like 10 years old too. Like he's, okay. Always wow. been a great athlete. Okay.
Right.
The difference was, and I asked Sammy, he said, you know, did you plan that? And he said, and he basically came back and, you know, the whole conversation was a lot of years ago, but he said, yeah, he planned that sequence based on what he saw from the umpire.
Nice.
It's like 10-year-olds nice. Don't think that way. Or like when he hit a ball right. into the gap and he'd see that the outfielder was turned. And even though he's not fast, he can make it to second with no problem. Because the outfielder turned to pick up the ball.
Right.
Right. And so he had the baseball IQ. So as you know, mentioned, I made a lot of friends through Twitter and I started, you know, trying to research and learn more because I realized that his skills, because I never played any formal baseball. My parents were immigrants. They came from Argentina. My dad was an athlete growing up. He played soccer. He was actually drafted to play professional soccer, but decided to get married instead. But when I came to New York, I mean, I played stickball, wiffle ball, punch ball, football. I played everything all day long. I was, you know, typical New York kid, you know, always in the streets. But I realized Sammy was going to outgrow my skills. Like he just had so much passion. He's like, you know, there's a picture in the book of him. He's not even 2 years old and he's pointing out to the field, the Brooklyn Cyclone Stadium. Cause that's all the only place he's ever wanted to be.
Right.
I'm like, okay, what can I do? And so I started using things like the Zep adapter early on, right? And blast yep. and all of those. And I started working on, you know, trying to improve his bat speed. Cause I said, okay, you know, if I have data, I understand how to manage data. That's what I've been doing, you know, with businesses for years. Like I know like how to set targets and focus for those things. And I met a lot of great coaches over the years on Twitter, everything from obviously Alan Yeager and Lance Wheeler. And it was Lance who invited us to come to Pitchapalooza. And we're down there and Sammy's listening to Mike Reinhold. And I tell the story in the book. And Mike Reynolds explaining how you gain velocity by, you know, every year you get older and every inch you grow and you can gain, excuse me, 14% by, you know, by working out. And Sammy does the math in his head. He's like, wow, I can be like 75. And he's like, okay, you know, when can I start working out? And we met one of the owners of True Grind Systems here in Austin, Texas, which was 10 minutes in a house, but we had to go to Nashville to find them.
Right. Yep. Funny how that works, right?
And he spent the last 5 years learning how to move, how to be strong, how to be explosive. I apologize. Allergies here in Austin are through the roof. And they are
you're good.
Kicking me like you can't imagine. He also, because of Lance, started a podcast after being at ABCA and interviewing a whole bunch of people there. And he got to interview folks like yourself and a whole bunch of others, you know, Jerry Weinstein, like you name it. It's like just an amazing guest list, you know, former players, current players. And he really developed a great mindset. He really developed the mind of a competitor. And one of the things I was fortunate to do, and Walter talks about it too, is, you know, we kept it fun through the early years. I never really focused in on travel ball. I really focused in on just him loving the game. When he felt like he was getting bored, we'd move him up because he was big. So they let him as a 10-year-old play 12U.
Right.
So he felt like he still had competition, but he always learned that point of he wasn't just competing against the kids he was facing. He was always competing against himself, and he was always competing on getting better every day.
Yeah, and look, that's such a huge deal what you just said. I didn't mean to cut you off.
Yeah, but
that's a huge deal that people miss on a lot. Like, it's fun and easy to compete. Like during games, like everyone loves to win, right? Like it's fun to win, right? And everyone thinks that means that they're a competitor, that they really like to win, right? But what's going to ultimately set you apart is, can you compete against yourself when there is no one else to compete against?
Compete in empty rooms. Yeah. I mean, and that's why the weight room, you know, forget the fact that, you know, now he is, you know, 16 years old. He's 6'4", 270 pounds, 240 lean pounds. Okay. He's a monster of a kid who can lift crazy weights, but he learned discipline. He learned accountability. He learned leadership. He learned communication. He learned skills that he wasn't going to get anywhere. And it's funny because yesterday I came across a podcast interview where his trainer and one of the other owners of the gym interviewed him right before they launched their second year of their summer grind program. And the previous year, here he was, the only preteen literally working out with college guys and a couple of high school guys. And it was a 6-hour day, six plus. He spent 2 hours hitting, then a little rest, then 2 hours of throwing work. And then they'd work out afterwards, right? And they'd have lunch during the middle of that. And they held him accountable. They would not let him just be a kid, and it's what he needed, and it forced him. Even when he went back to school, like when kids were speaking up in class, like he was speaking back to them saying, hey guys, you know, like he was taking ownership of that for himself and for his classmates. And that's the lessons that he learned from training that you don't get on a baseball field.
Absolutely. And look, so we have a serious culture problem in youth baseball today. And I'm going to say this as nicely as I can. Parents, coaches, everyone involved in the entire system, right? Sort of just kind of force feeds games upon games upon games upon on these kids, right? So everyone thinks more games, more games, more games. If we play better competition, then we're getting better, blah, 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 right? We get more reps. We play more competition. We're just going to have to get better that way. And what they completely fail on is that you need time away from actually playing those games to get better. Because if you're just playing games with your bad movement patterns or whatever the case may be, all you're doing is getting better at those bad patterns, right? So yes, at a young age, if you play a ton of games and have a ton of practice, right? like you're going to get better because of that. Like that's a given, right? If you take repetitions, you're going to get better. But it doesn't mean it's setting you up for the necessary movements and tools that you need to be able to play beyond high school. So that's why you have this whole entire process where some of these players are going to end up catching you no matter what, because you're not putting in the work to actually get better or create better tools. You're just working on the skill set. Does that make sense?
Totally. Let me give you two stories. So I was talking to a college coach the other day. You know, they're up in the north. They've got to be indoors. There's not much they can do. So they're having their kids play wiffle ball, and he made one of the rules that you can't punt. And one of the kids got, you know, picked off at third, whatever. He was upset, and then he wanted to get up and wanted to punt. And he started pouting because coach told him, you know, you can't punt.
Yep.
That kid's not going to make it. He's just not going to make it. Like, you give me the constraint and you give me a kid who's a competitor, they're going to find a way no matter what.
Right, right. Look, so that's one of the things that I talk about so much. And I think that it's misunderstood. There is a difference. So I'm gonna be careful here, but with creating a winning culture, right? Like, we're going to talk about this, creating a winning culture. That's the thing that everybody wants, right? To create that better culture, like that culture that really breeds winners, quote unquote, right? There is a difference when it comes to just playing or just winning a bunch of games. That doesn't necessarily mean you're creating a winning culture, okay? To me, creating a winning culture is learning to compete, right? Like being an ultimate competitor. And so what I always tell people at the youth level, especially, if you're winning almost every game you play, you're not a real competitor.
Correct.
Because that means you're not playing good enough competition. You should win every single game you play. You're going to learn what you're really made of as a competitor when you start getting your teeth kicked in a little bit.
Well, and
can you come? Are you going to come back and still want more?
Yeah. Right, and that brings me to the second story. Sammy, the summer before freshman tryouts, he broke his ankle. He had big boats for feet. You know, he was wearing like size 15, and he rolled over while doing A Skip karaoke. Instead of snapping, you know, ligaments and tendons or just spraining something, he ended up actually breaking the bone.
Okay.
Of course, I couldn't, you know, didn't know when he was going to be back, but signed him up for just like the local rec league because I wasn't going to pay for any travel team because we didn't even know if he was going to be able to play in the fall. And this is before the fall, before high school tryouts. But he managed to get back and he was able to pitch a couple of games with braces on, and, you know, played first maybe once or twice a little bit, right? Again, with the brace on. He did pitch two no hitters in all that when he came back. But then he goes to high school tryouts and he doesn't make the team.
Right.
And he's devastated. I mean, he calls me up, you know, like completely crushed. Like, he can't imagine why, if he was the hardest throwing freshman who threw by far the highest percentage of strikes out of anybody, and in the next part of the tryout, they did a little scrimmage and he ended up facing sophomores instead of freshmen and struck three of them out. And the only ground ball that was given up was a changeup to a lefty that he put between the shortstop and the third baseman, and just neither one moved because no one expected it. Okay, right. But it's weak, weak, weak contact. And he didn't make the team.
Yep.
And most kids at that point would be like, okay, I'm done. Like, you know, and that's all he thought about it through middle school was making the high school teams. All he ever wanted to do.
Yep.
And he went back into the weight room and you know the book Relentless?
Yep.
Tim Grover. Chris Paddock was training at the gym at that point, and he had the word relentless on his glove, and you know, he modeled his kind of behavior and realized, you know, you've got to kick it into an extra gear. It's like, yes, he was working out and it was more of, you know, when he was younger, kind of for the, you know, the check mark grade. But now he realized, okay, you know what? My size and everything's not going to be good enough. I've really got to take it to another level. I've really got to compete against myself.
Yep.
And he hasn't had a season since, you know, with it, with his travel team, whether he's facing national scout teams, you know, or the local teams and a lot of really good teams here, that he hasn't dominated on the mound.
Yep.
And it's that culture that he just knows, like, you're just not going to beat me. Like, I'm sorry. Like, I don't care what my teammates do behind me. You're not going to beat me. You're not going to hit me hard. And that's just the way it's been. And you know, the college coach has seen that character in him and, you know, heard it from the head of the organization. You know, obviously he looks at his size. That you don't have to work hard to project that Sammy's going to be a physical guy.
Right. Right. No, absolutely.
Right. I mean, absolutely. You know, he weighs as much as Aaron Judge.
Right.
Right. And he's probably as dense. He's just not as mature yet.
Right. Right,
physically. Because he's still a baby. He's still 16.
Right. No, absolutely.
But, and coach even said, like, you know, yes, you know, Sammy spends most of his time pitching, but he wants them hitting when he's up in college. Cause it's like, why wouldn't they want to put a bat into a guy who's 6'4", 240?
Right.
270.
Yep. No, absolutely. Absolutely.
Right. Cause you're going to miss balls and create damage.
Yep. Yep.
And
no.
So I think that's the big lesson. It's like, Sammy has always committed to a goal. When we started working and trying to change a little bit of his swing, when he was in, you know, in his younger years, and we'd say, hey, you know, if you suck for a while now, but it makes you better in high school, are you okay with that? And he'd be like, yeah, because the goal has never been about where he is today. It's about what can he do to make sure he's playing tomorrow.
No, man, that is gold right there. So look, there are layers to this whole entire process, right? And that's really what we have to get caught up in, is the process. But like, when we're starting out, like when players are just starting out, like, we have to help them essentially love it. Like, that's step one, right? Love
it. Just have loads of fun.
Yeah. And then, like, you want to put them in situations to be successful early, to sort of get a taste of what that is, right? But then once you get there, it has to be about figuring out how to be a competitor. And then what you just said, you have to have clear goals to this whole thing, right? Like, it's not about, or shouldn't be about, being a good 10-year-old, a good 12-year-old. Because more often than not, the kids that are just a little bit more developed at young ages, so at the very young ages, the ones that have more hand-eye coordination are probably going to win out. As they get a little bit older, the ones that are bigger
or faster
with hand-eye coordination or faster are going to win out. But in the long run, those kids get passed by all the time because they are good at a young age, and they know that they're good, and then it becomes a path of least resistance, right? Because you're not playing good competition and you don't know what it means to go, like, what it's going to look like for you to play at higher levels, right? So that's where those goals are such a big deal. I would be willing to bet if you asked most middle school age players in every sport, like, what are your actual goals? Right. Well, and they would say, oh, you know, I want to do this.
Yeah. Most would have a dream of playing in the big leagues.
Exactly.
But there's a difference between having a dream and having a goal with an actual plan. And so there are two things that are really critical there. And, you know, we've always had that philosophy that you train for the level you want to be at, not the level you're at.
Absolutely.
Right? So,
absolutely.
Like, the program he's doing at the gym is what the college guys do today. It's not what just absolutely. The typical high schools. You know, A, he's stronger, but two, he's got a work capacity that's beyond them because he's got a work ethic that's different than most of them.
Yep, absolutely.
But two, and he heard this from a lot of the early pros that he interviewed in his podcast, right, the retired guys, guys who came in later rounds, guys who weren't more talented, but they got to the big leagues. And he said, you know, there are lots of guys with talent, but I outworked them, right? I did something different that I had the mindset. And it's like, I have no doubt that if Sammy continues enjoying the way he enjoys it now, we will see him someday at some pro level. What level? I don't know. That's, you know, a lot of that's lottery. But he could make a living out of the game. There's no question in my mind that he can do that.
Yep,
in whatever capacity, I don't That's even care it is, as long as he's passionate about it.
Yep, absolutely.
He's always found a way. He's always willing to work harder than anybody next to him.
Yeah, no, I mean, look, like I said, that's what it's all about right there. And just one last thing, then we're going to transition to this mentors of baseball thing. When people always talk about like they're competitive and this and that, right? Everyone likes to win. I want to make sure I drive this point out. Everyone likes to win. But when you start to not be successful for the first time, how are you going to respond to that? And that's sort of the thing that's going to separate the athletes, right? Are you really, really committed to this, using the title of your book? Or do you just do it because you like the way it makes you feel when you're having success doing it, right? So I just want to make sure parents are fully understanding that when they hear this, that this shouldn't just be about winning baseball games. Like your identity shouldn't be wrapped up, or your day should not be driven by whether or not you win or lose a baseball game, right? Like it should absolutely, as you get older, it should drive you crazy to lose. I don't mean to be like that. 100%. But you have to understand, okay, like what can I do to use this to my advantage? And if it's not like that, if that's not the mindset, if it's just, oh, we stink or I hate this feeling, right? And then you're sitting on the bench for the first time. Okay, I'll quit. You were never a competitor.
Right. Or you don't make a team.
Yeah. You just weren't, you weren't the competitor that you have told yourself you are. So all right, let's transition. Mentors of Baseball, the Twitter spaces that y'all are doing. This is really, really cool. And I want to really make sure anyone that's listening to this fully understands what's going on here and checks this out, because y'all have had some really cool guests, a lot of college coaches on there, and just talking about like how cool is it to have college coaches on this show telling you what they're looking for, like what it takes to be at this level. So parents, you need to go out there and listen to these guys. They're telling you what it takes. And if you're not going to listen to them, I don't know who else you're going to listen to. So talk to us about this Mentors of Baseball Twitter spaces.
Yeah. So Walter Beattie, who I wrote the book with, and hit our mutual friend now, Butch Bacala, who is a former national cross checker, are working every week to bring guests on. So on Sunday night, Butch hosts a show for his baseball parents in the organization that he runs, and for the baseball mentors community. And then Walter does one on Monday nights. And, you know, last week we had UCLA's John Savage on there. We've had Scott Foxhall from Mississippi State, Dave Lawn from, Arizona. We've had Jeremy Sheetner and Pat Casey, and we've had MLB pros like Michael Kadire, and like it goes on and on. And, you know, this past the other day, we just had Steve Holm from Illinois State, and these guys are sharing with you, and we're getting the questions from the community, and we're answering questions for you. We did a show on, you know, all the different tools that we love and that we use. And we brought those vendors along to answer questions about the products. Look, this game is becoming about an access to information. You know, yes, it's a certain level of talent, but access to information matters. And it's Absolutely. Why we wanted to put out the book. We want to make it easy for people to get. They don't have to spend $3,500 on a recruiting service. There are ways to do this on your own. And here you can hear and get all your questions answered just by logging into Twitter or by listening to it recorded. If you can't make it live, that's okay. We record all the episodes, using Anchor. It's all on there. And they can just search for Mentors of Baseball or Play Ball Kid, and they'll find those episodes.
Yep, no. Perfect. Yeah. Look, parents, if you're listening, you need to go check this stuff out. It's absolutely awesome that this information is available to you. You got to take advantage of it. So Brian, if you will, just kind of tell them where they can find all this stuff at. Committed, Mentors of Baseball, Play Ball Kid, yourself, just tell them where they can find you at.
Well, I'm easy to find pretty much everywhere on social media. You could just Google me, but on Twitter, I'm The Grok. And there's a whole funny story behind that name as well. We could go through that a different time.
All right.
But yeah, you'll find me sharing, you know, about who's going to be the current guest and you know, links to it. They can also go to Mentors of Baseball, or Baseball Mentors is the actual handle on Twitter, but it will show up either way. And the book is only available through Amazon. You can get it as a Kindle version, which is available on every device, or you can get a paperback version of the book.
Well, there you go. Perfect. Well, Brian, this has been great. Thanks for coming on. And I'm looking forward to following what you got going on there. It's been good stuff for everyone involved.
I appreciate it. And Harold, again, you know, I want to thank you because, you know, like, you know, many of the guests that Sammy had, you know, you've left an impact. And I think that's the part that, you know, when Sammy had to go ahead and announce his commitment, like he wanted it to tag all these coaches who poured into him, you know, when he was doing his podcast and he had these questions. And it's amazing that this community just wants to support players. Like if you're committed to learning, there's a community out there to support you.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Look, so that actually means a lot to me. And I love being able to follow Sammy's journey. I've never met y'all in person, but I absolutely love watching Sammy's journey as it happens on play out on Twitter. I love watching it. I really do. I'm excited for him.
I appreciate it.
All right, Brian. Well, thanks for coming on. I appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Mazingo Baseball Podcast. I need y'all to do me a favor. Go check out all the social media accounts. It's Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, at Mazingo Baseball. The website's MazingoBaseball.com. And be sure to check out the e-guide I wrote called Young Guns. It's a 90-page e-guide dedicated to pitching development from the youth levels all the way through. It's got a ton of supplemental videos that come along with it, including the Ground Force video series. And if you feel up to it, leave me a comment. Let me know what you think of the show.